into the party wagon and hold on to your pizza.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Epic Tales from the Source. Eric is here with me. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself there, Steve?
I'm doing Justin. I'm doing great, man. It's all right. It's okay. Just bury the lead. It's all right. So we have a very special guest today. Our guest today is very well known in the TMNT community. He has a very famous name, but will insist he's the artist and not the author. And his pictures are definitely worth a thousand words, but have better endings. I am talking, of course, about our artist friend, Mr. Stephen King.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you, man. You've been on our radar for quite some time. You know, you and I have chatted a little bit, and Eric's chatted, and there's a lot of buzz about you in the turtle community. A lot, like all the people in the know seem to be like, "Oh, I got a piece from King" or something like that. So, you know, it's exciting to have you.
I appreciate you guys having.
I wanted to bug you by jumping in with a question here. Obviously, your turtle stuff is kind of very classic looking, and it looks like the Mirage stuff. What's your history with turtles? What got you into them?
What got me into it was, obviously, I grew up in the Boston area as a kid in the 80s, so that's like Mecca of turtle land. So like that kind of like got me into it. My funniest story was probably... My dad was in the army, so like he had those giant yellow military tablets, and I would always take those and draw on them, and I would always take his Sharpies, and I ended up drawing like this big giant Ninja Turtle one Sunday morning on the table. You know, Sharpies go through notebook paper well, so our dining room table ended up having a tattoo of a Ninja Turtle for probably about 10 years.
That's great.
But like I just got into it like everybody else did. Seemed to bit me pretty hard, especially being up in that area. So like it was very prevalent. And then my dad and my uncle and everybody like helped feed into it. Like they take me to comic shops. My family's originally from West Virginia. And so we always go down to Fairmont outside of Morgantown every summer and usually every Christmas. And there was a comic shop that I always like we drove right past. It was literally a block away from my grandparents' house. So my uncle would take me, and that's like really where I found out about the Mirage Turtles was because it was like, I'm sure you guys know the difference between comic shops and comic shops back then, like in the 80s, they were like CD, cigarette smoke, just grimy.
Like the movie Lost Boys?
Yeah, like it was real legit. And like the guy who owned it, John, who passed away, I think, a couple years ago, he would be in there sitting there smoking cigarettes, him and his buddy, and like just... comics all over the place. They had like the high-end books like tacked up on the wall and everything, and so like that was my first like taste of comics and turtles, really, was going to that comic shop, which is still open today. A new owner owns it.
So I remember the smell of those types of places
down there. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome. So do you have any early books that you collected that you recall? Like, did you keep the stuff that you had from back then?
Actually, I do. It's probably my favorite turtle story is, obviously, when I was a kid, my dad wasn't buying like a $50 book because who the hell does that back then? Yeah, but they had the Raphael Micro from Mirage up on the wall. It was like one of their star books. And I always wanted it, and they had it up there forever. So like as a kid, like I always wanted it, couldn't get it. Flash had like about 15, 20 years later, I'm kind of out of comics. I went to the store the one day with my nephew, and they still had it up on the wall, the same exact book from when I was a kid.
No kidding.
So I actually bought it from the store, and like I have it downstairs in my collection now.
Did the price go up since then?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think I paid $100 for it or something. Dude,
that's super reasonable. Absolutely. Wow. Yeah,
so,
and you know, the condition hasn't changed since back then.
Cause I mean, it was tacked up on that wall forever.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
That's cool. That's a great cover too. So, and, just really classic. So I'm actually wearing that shirt from the Loot Crate.
I see that.
Yeah, I think this is actually from issue number 2, though. But still, it's got the Raph on it.
Yeah, I mean, Raphael's timeless. He's like the best turtle.
Well, that answers that question. So far, you're from West Virginia, so that's in Eric's the court there, and you're a Raph fan, also in Eric's court. So,
and I used to live in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. See? Well, I mean, there you go. So it's like you guys, you know, with the red beards, you may be related, you know. Hey, who knows? You got that Viking blood.
Right,
so,
right.
You have a very classic Mirage Kevin Peter style. Do you have any sort of like idea where that came from? Like, did you just kind of latch onto that style? Because I mean, I've seen that you've even recreated the first image of the turtles, which was just amazing to me. Like
I was like one of those guys who like studied the art form from every single issue and like just really just tried to make my own, but it ended up blending in. I feel like honestly, like a lot of people say like I have the Kevin Eastman style, but like I kind of feel like I have the old Jim Lawson style more so, because like I'm replicating Kevin and Pete's style and Jim's style all at once, kind of, in my opinion.
Interesting. I wouldn't have thought the Lawson style, but now I could probably see it in there. Yeah.
Like Return to New York, that book arc was probably my favorite Mirage storyline. I remember being a kid, like I beat the hell out of 19, 20, and 21. Like I still have my original copies and I recently got like new ones that are better. But like looking at the comics, those out of all the books I have, those three were beat to hell and back. So like they were the ones I took to school and like I'd read and draw from all the time.
Yeah, I was like that, but I got into it like slightly later. So I was like really into the AC Farley stuff, like and Michael Dooney and the Michael Zulli ones, if you recall that, like the and you don't usually see this one often, but it's the Souls Winter, where they just look completely different, and I'm just like, oh my god, I can't believe,
yeah, like they look like real turtles, like giant Conan style.
Yeah. And what was the other one? Rick Veitch, I think, was another, like, that's like, and I got into it at that era, so it's like those were kind of my things. I see it though, and I see a lot of Pete in yours, and I see like the way that you shade is similar to Kevin, and it's like sometimes they're indistinguishable because their layouts, you know, Pete would maybe do something like a little bit more rounder and Kevin would do something a little bit more square, but it's like your stuff is like flush with both. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool, because it's not like you copied their style. It's like it influenced you and it's something completely different. So that's why I really
that's the thing. Like I don't want to be like one of those guys who like just emulate somebody. I wanted to have my own style. That's why I do the stippling shading. Which is funny story is like a couple years ago at Granite Con, Steve Levine and Jim like both like said they were just shocked that I do that style, and then they pretty much asked me if I'm crazy, because you're literally just doing dots
for constantly, hours,
like dot dot dot, and
you have to hit the same intensity of the pen every single
time.
And
it was the joke, because I actually, my regular 9-to-5, I work for the post office, so you kind of got to be crazy to work there. So doing dots instead of stabbing people seems to be a better idea. You know?
Yet another change from the 80s. So
yeah.
Yeah, and I mean that's one of those things. Like I'm a student of art myself. I love it, and the technique that you use was made popular by Surratt, with the Surratt dots and the pointillisms. And you know, I think you're calling it stippling, and I see it, and it's just so appreciated on that, because of the way that it makes that gradient, instead of just like a whole ton of cross hatching, or you could go like just dump a whole bunch of ink on a page or something. It's really unique. And it stands out. I like it. I think it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's
appreciate it.
It's very, it's definitely different, retro comic, you know?
I don't think there's anybody else who really does it. I mean, I've seen some people. It goes back to learning like pen and ink style and stuff in art school. And like you said, instead of just dumping black ink everywhere, like kind of give it a little depth. Like I've started to try to do like different size nibs whenever I do it, kind of to replicate the duotone type effect, so it like goes from a little bit lighter to darker, and that's just something I do, like, which a lot of people don't really pick up on, but if they do, like, I'm amazed. Like I know Randy's like real eye on it, and he's like, dude, I see you went from this to this, and it's, I'm like, good, I'm glad somebody sees it and appreciate it, because, you know, it's something just stupid that I try to do, I guess.
It's cool. I like it, and it doesn't shock me that Randy sees that. We're talking about Randy MacArthur, MacArthur's art auctions, art house, right? Check him out. So, but yeah, he's got a great eye for art. And, you know, we've had him on. And, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He's got a bunch now, you had mentioned art school. Did you go to art school?
I actually didn't. I went through, at my high school, we had a VOTEC. So they had a commercial art program, which was like 3 years long. And I still like swear my teacher, Kathy Walker, is like the greatest person who's ever instilled anything into me. I regret being a high school kid in her classes because, you know, when you're a high school kid, you don't care. You don't pay that much attention. And like, if I could go back, like everybody's like, oh, I'd never go back to high school if I could. I actually would, because I would rather be able to sit there and absorb more from her than I probably did, because we all just screwed around. I mean, it's art class. So like, we're just drawing anyways, but like it was different. So like her teaching us a lot of stuff. Like I still talk to her every once in a while on Facebook.
Oh, that's cool.
And a couple of the guys who we went, like I was in school with, we still get together and do like a drink and draw and just hang out. Like we all just tell Kathy Walker stories basically.
Oh, that's awesome. Was she like a hippie teacher? Like,
yes and no. Sort of, but like she was like, it's kind of hard to describe, her style. She was very open to everything. Like she actually, brought in, Don Simpson, from Megaton Man.
Oh, wow.
He's from Pittsburgh. So like she knew him. He actually came in and talked to our class a couple times, which was really awesome because like it was basically like commercial art. They focused on like doing like line art, advertising and stuff. So like when she found out like our class mostly like cared about doing comics, like she reached out to a friend and brought him in and had no clue it was going to be him. So
wow, that's really cool. Did he sign any books for you
at that time? No, because I didn't have any Megaton Man stuff. Yeah, I wasn't privy to a lot of his stuff. Finding out now, like he does a lot of the cons around here and I've met him a couple times, but seeing some of his underground stuff is very interesting. Yeah. So, I actually saw him at a Comic-Con a couple years ago and I had him sign a couple books and I had told him, like, you know, he came and talked to our class and he was like, oh, well, I'm glad I didn't ruin you. So, it was pretty cool.
Oh, that's so cool. If you, I was looking at a couple of commissions that you have. Have you been approached to do any variants or anything like that for Turtles, or is that something that you would be open to?
I would. I haven't really. I did my own medals and did some stuff just because, like, as much fun as I have doing art, like, my time is, like, really stressful, like, with work, family, and everything. And, like, art can't be my full-time job, and I'm okay with that. Like, I know a lot of guys, like, who they've quit their 9-to-5s, and this is what they do. So they're, like, always out, like, promoting themselves. I'm not a very boastful person. I'm not very, like, outgoing. I'm fairly introverted. For me to actually be doing this is kind of nuts, to be honest with you. So I haven't really been approached. I've talked to a couple people, like, and if they want to do it, I'll do whatever. Like I've done some things are sketchy stuff, and like I've been talked to a couple times, but like nothing really pans out, and it doesn't break my heart. Like, would I want to do a variant cover? Of course. Would I want to be professionally published? Of course. Is it going to make or break me? Nah. Like maybe if I would have stuck with doing art all through, like after high school and everything, yeah, I would be frustrated that I haven't gotten anything, but. This is just fun. This is something to do. I enjoy the hell out of drawing and especially turtles and stuff, but like, it's not my end all. It's not going to kill me if I don't ever get published.
You're good enough, man. So it's like, if ever you wonder, it's like, if people think you're going to, you are, you know, I was looking at those covers that you made and had colored like for the Ronin. One was looks like the Leonardo pose were from issue one, and the other is like your Ronin in the rain. And I'm like, oh man, that one right there, that would have been absolutely just devastatingly perfect to put on top of like one of those big oversized Ronin covers. And I would have loved that.
Yeah. So like, it was cool. Like, I mean, I still have a good amount of my medals that I made. Since they kind of became taboo since like, I know, Randy sent a couple to get graded and they come back as no grade. So you know, most collectors, they want something that's gradable. So, like, I'm sitting on quite a few still, which is okay with me. Like, I had fun making them. So, the people who have them, like, I know up at Granite Con last year, like, the most probably eye-bugging thing was I sold a bunch of them, and then people brought them back, like, with Kevin, Jim, Steve, and all these guys who have signed them. And I'm like, why are they signing my book? Like, that's mind-blowing to me. And that right there was just, like, enough. Like, I was like, all right, I'm cool. I'm whatever. I don't need to sell anything else. Seeing them, like, all signed on my book is amazing.
That's so cool. So you met these guys because you're over at Granite. Can you talk a little bit about your experience at Granite State this past year?
Mm-hmm. Like I've met Jim, Steve, and Kevin quite a few times. This is the first time meeting Mateus and obviously Eric Talbot and Ciro. Ciro is probably my highlight because his 2012 cartoon is kind of what got me back into turtles and drawing.
Nice.
I have a 14-year-old stepdaughter, and like when me and like her were like bonding when she was like two, like we didn't really get along. Like she's 2 years old, she's a little girl. I'm not used to. I have nephews. I've never really been around like a little girl, and she started getting into turtles, watching the cartoon, and she actually challenged me, told me I couldn't draw a turtle, and I was like, dude, I used to draw turtles all the time. So, like, I started getting back into it, and then so me and her really bonded over it. So, actually meeting Ciro and telling him that story was – and plus my daughter was there with me at the con. Both my kids came up with me.
That's awesome.
Was, like, awesome. Really full circle. But, like, Kevin and Jim and all them, like, they've always been very, very cool. I've started going to different cons, and I think it was 2016, going to places where Kevin was. So like the first con I went to was, what was it? It was Dayton, some con in, down in Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, the Nutter Center. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I was there too.
That was like the first time I had met Kevin and got back into comics. So it was really cool to meet him and talk to him. That's actually when I started to like do like a piece. I've given Kevin a piece every time I've seen him of my art. And, so like, and he's like giving me feedback every time, and he remembers like every piece that I did, which blows mind away. And he's always like, oh, you're getting better at this and this. And so it's like really cool to have that critique. The first time I met Steve, I went up to his shop when he was closing, when I met Peter for the first and only time too.
Lucky man.
So talking to Steve was really cool. Like he's really down to earth, real, real awesome dude. And Jim is like salt of the earth type people. Like you could have a conversation with him and not know anything about him. And like you walk away, like feeling better knowing him.
That's the word on the street where we hear that like Jim is like the nicest guy known to man. You know,
yeah.
We had Steve like, on actually two episodes ago.
Yeah, I did listen to that one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great dude. And I mean, super generous with like all his answers and everything. And I'm like total Michelangelo.
Yeah.
You know, like, just a little bit.
These guys are great. And I was talking to my buddy about this yesterday, and it's like that group of people that you had with Jim and Eric and Peter and Kevin and Steve and you know, Mike and Craig and like all those guys like together for Mirage Studios, that's never going to happen again. And
no.
It's crazy because it's like they all put everything into these characters that Pete and Kevin made. Now it's like, what's the next closest thing you can think to ever happen like that? Maybe Image Comics, but they all owned their own IP. So it was like, okay, we're a bunch of different business owners working under a label. So that ain't the same. As much as I loved Image and all that, it's like, there's nothing else that's ever been an independent like Mirage. It's crazy.
No, like, and they had such a like melting pot of different style and talent and
different. And literally a book named Melting Pot.
And so like they just, that's probably why I gravitated so much to the Mirage books, was because like as much as everybody complains it's like not a conducive story, but every book like is kind of its own story for the most part, and whether it falls in line with the main story or not, they're all epic storylines. They all like make sense. Like probably some of my favorite ones was which one? It was a Dooney book with the sea creatures.
Oh, jeez. Okay. So this wasn't one with Radical and
no, it was Brutal? Like Sons of the Silent something or something. There was like four sea creatures, and there was a girl, like there was also a girl.
And she was the mermaid. Died. Yeah.
Yeah. Mermaid, basically. Yeah. Yeah. And that one, like, really kind of cemented the fact that, like, you know, there was a line in there where, like, they're watching, the turtles are watching them take their sister out to the sea, and that's it. There's no more of them. That's all there is. And they kind of hit them like, that's all there is. That's all. There's only four turtles. There's not going to be anybody else. So, and it kind of like resonates the fact that, like, you know, they're special. So,
yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. Like, you could take this anyway. Like, they've dealt with, you know, extreme science. They've dealt with the metaphysical. You know, they've dealt with, like, just crazy things and resurrections. And they did the whole Newhart thing where it's like everything that happened was a dream. So it's like all of these things that happened. One of my favorite stories is about vampires. You know, with Donnie creating a giant mech, and then they're literally fighting an army of vampires. I'm like, this is amazing. And it just goes to show, it's like that 2012 cartoon. It's not all just the turtles versus the Shredder. Because if that happens, that's boring. Like, you don't want to see that. So it's like, okay, how do you create additional content? And that's what they did. So they had, it's like, oh, well, we're going to take you through time. Or, oh, we're going to fight vampires. Or we're going to fight aliens and put you in space. Or give you a magic crystal on your pencil so you create everything and, you know, Jack Kirby's there. It's like, what?
Yeah, like it literally touches every scope that you could ever want in a book.
And it ends. You know, it's one of those things too where it's like, it's precious because it's like, what did we get? Like, how many Mirage issues? Like, less than, fewer than 60, I believe, right?
Yeah, there was 62 of the first run, and then 12, I think, of the second.
Yeah, and then Tails takes over, and Tails went to, I want to say, like 60-something. So, like, you could literally combine both of those runs and the 12-issue run and be at where we are now with the IDW, which has just hit 137, so, which I just picked up and read, and it was really good. So
yeah, I've been slacking. I haven't read any of Armageddon Game. I actually just finally read Lost Years 1 the other day.
Oh, good. Okay. So, well, what'd you think?
It's interesting. Like, I'm kind of indifferent to the whole thing because, in my opinion, like, it seemed like they may have changed the original story from what they were going to go through to leave it open to add more to it instead of making it a final turtle story as it was trumpeted, which is okay because, I mean, money makes the world go round, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm okay with it. It's just weird, like, to be bringing in four new turtles, which I'm not opposed to. It's whatever, just not what I was expecting. I was kind of expecting, you know, like, for Lost Years, I wanted to see them go back in and show, like, the missing parts. How did Mikey become so vicious and just downright straight killer style, you know? Because that wasn't his style ever.
No, definitely not.
Like, seeing how, like, he would go through, which I'm sure they probably will touch on, like, absorbing and compartmentalizing each and every one of his brother and his father's deaths. So, and seeing how he becomes, like, such a... just basically a lone wolf situation. So
that's cool. I liked Ronan a lot, and I really appreciate the ending that they gave it because it needed to have something that was definitive. And, you know, there's speculation in Lost Years. It's like, oh, is Michelangelo or Oroka Hiroto still alive? I'm like, I don't think so. You know, I don't think that's the kind of way they want to tell this story by leaving these sort of, you know, like, fishtails out there for people to grasp at. But, I mean, I find myself more interested with the new turtles than with what's going on in the first one. That being said, it's like, I still like it, but maybe it was a little bit more repetitive than it could have been, you know, Lost Years, you know, where it's like, okay, why are we going back to this again? We just saw it with Mike, and then now it's like, we're going back. I'm like, yeah, maybe it could, you know, I just think that it could have started a little stronger. And I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's just like, I wish it's like, all right, they're kind of giving us like Michelangelo, but it's like, maybe give us a little bit more of where it's going. And that was just my take on it.
Yeah. I would love to see the battle that set up where Raphael goes nuts and goes lone wolf and tries to take out
by
himself.
Now you're talking. You know, like, some, I mean, like, bring some of that,
like,
in.
How that ends up spiraling. Like, we see them say they broke the truce, and then next thing you know, Splinter's thrown on the dining room table, like, half dead, and we don't know what did it, like, what kicked it off. So
it wouldn't it be cool to get Michelangelo's perspective from that? So here's his viewpoint of what's happening while Splinter's on the table, and then we get to see the it play it like that's what I was looking for, instead of just like, oh, there's a bunch of guys beating him up, and I'm like, all right, that happened in Karate Kid Part 2. So it's like I get it. You know, it's like it and it's all right. It's just it's not exactly what I want. So, you know, but then again, I mean that's like subversion too, where it's like they can't give me exactly what I want because there's a story that they're leading to. So I'm just hoping that it gets like, because I love the new Turtles myself. I think that is the far more interesting part of the story. So I'm more invested in that part.
See, this is just me personally when it comes to the Lost Years. Is Lost Years are the years that were lost, like back in the day, not the future. And I'm really, really, really shocked that they didn't decide to go to start a new kind of Ronin universe instead of doing the Lost Years and putting them both together. You know what I'm saying? With the new Turtles and then going back into the past, because I mean, obviously that's what they're doing right now. They're kind of going back and forth with, you know, going to, you know, Mikey going to Japan and all this other stuff, fighting all these people. And then we're going back and forth to the new four Turtles and stuff. And it's like back and forth. Like I'm looking forward to, like you guys are, is, you know, what's going on with Raphael? You know, what the hell, how did April survive the explosion? You know, yes, and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, and I figured that we're going to get there, but right now, I mean, it's super slow. The story is super, super, super slow. And the new Turtles, I'm interested in about it. It's kind of interesting. I think we got, what, two girls and two boys, yep. Turtles, if I'm correct.
It's a mixed crew this time.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. This is just me personally. I like it. I like it right now. And I hope they go more back to the past and start working on the new Turtles. And me personally, they should just put the new Turtles into a whole different, you know, thing. I mean, I'm just saying they could make money off of it. They do it right.
Well, I'm sure they're doing this too because they want you to kind of piggyback off of the story with Ronan and then have these guys in there to like establish who they are. So it's like by the time they're ready, they're going to get their own book. So I'm sure they're kind of gauging it like that, which is a very safe play. So
yeah. But you know, like you guys said, you know, we're looking forward to, you know, why in the hell is Splinter put on the table?
I didn't even thought about it until Steve said that. So
what happened, you know, with Leo, you know, the whole thing with Leo, you know, how did April make it out of there? You know, like, you know, there's so much missing. You know, when did they pull up Raphael out of the water? Yeah. You know, it's stuff like that. You know, there's stuff that they gotta.
It's so
what
crazy.
A lot of people are really, yeah. really wanting. That's just me. It's like Rob Dennard was saying, you know, like, I hope that they, you know, they go back 30 years and figure out, you know, like, hey, you know, I hope I get to hear about this. That's me personally. That's what I want, you know, and I'm looking forward to hopefully, you know what I'm saying? Hopefully that comes through, you know what I'm saying? But we will see. You know, only time will tell. You know, don't get me wrong, I'll buy the 5-part series, but I'm not going to lie. If I don't get what I want out of it, then I don't know if I'm going to continue, you know what I'm saying? It's rough because, you know, the Ronin really got me into comics, like really, really, like actually reading the comics, you know? And you know, the Ronin got me hooked, and it started a whole new world for me. You know, new life for me. So, you know, I just hope that I hope I get the answered in the next couple issues on some of the stuff. You know, like you guys do.
Yeah. Was the thing. Like I wouldn't say I was disappointed with the ending of issue 5, but like I kind of wanted. I don't know. Like I kind of felt like it was just too much of the Dark Knight trope with how they killed Hiroko and him in the mud. Like it just like the electro blast and everything. I me personally, I kind of really just would have liked to see them do like something more severe, which I'm sure like Nickelodeon, Viacom handcuffed them with what they wanted to do. Viacom's not going to let them cut his head off like Jim did in Return to New York and everything, which I kind of would have loved to have seen. That's why I actually did that cover the way I did.
Yeah.
As a homage, because I felt that would have brought the story full circle. Like that would have brought the whole Mirage world to the end. And I know they kept saying like Ronin isn't just Mirage. It's like its own thing, but deep down, we all know it's a Mirage story if it's Peter and Kevin's baby, you know? And, like, I just kind of was hoping we were going to see something more like that instead of just, like, oh, no, it's an electronic boom. He has a heart attack. He's dead. You know?
It's funny, too, because it's, like, the brutality from the series really came from Oroko. And that, I want to say it was, like, issue 4 or something like that where they showed it. And that was, like, the most brutal of all of them, where you've got, like, Splinter there, and he's like with one swipe beheads 3 people in the snow, and you know it's like there's that aspect of it, which I mean it kind of shows up in 2 with Raph like cutting through ninjas like crazy, and then it shows up in 3 a little bit, but it's really more of like an explosion sort of thing and smashing robots. But 4 is like that might be that is actually my favorite issue, but it's the one that I feel is like the closest to like a true Mirage. Because it's like it has all these weird little facets to it, and you see the brutality. And the only part I really don't get is like the crazy Oroko who's barefoot in the rain, like jumping off of steel girders and stuff. Like, all right, maybe I just don't get that. But you know, like the other part, it's like, oh, he cut that dude's head off and put it on a pike. Okay.
Yeah, they definitely seem to given Hiroko like a little bit of a weird like the Crow vibe.
And it was so the Crow, yes.
And they never kind of like followed back up to it. Like they kind of like made it seem like he was going to be like some wild brooding like malcontent, and then he kind of just like wussed out and like used mousers and everything else instead of like going full bore like ninja style, so to speak.
I get it, because his hubris and his pride are what undid him, and that makes sense for the character. You know, oh, I'll handle this myself, and, you know, he's fighting people like Lex Luthor or Deathstroke or someone where he's like, all right, all of you attack me at once. If you don't try to kill, you know, like stuff. I'm like, okay, I get it. You established, like, that part of who he is. But what's going on over here? You know, so maybe we also get to see that, and that's the Mirage fan in me who, you know, it's not like I'm blood hungry or anything else like that, but there are those aspects, those like brutality aspects of Mirage comics that you did see in Ronin, and you got like that little glimpse of it, and that's something that it's like I'd like to see them get back to a little bit and not kind of water it down. So, and I really agree with you there. I like the ending on how everything turned out. They both had to die. It was just a matter of how it happened. So it's like it was very Dark Knight, but I mean, you see behind me, I've got literally 3 things, Turtles, Hellboy, and Batman behind me. So it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go against the Holy Dark Knight Returns. So I'm like, I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Dark Knight, was he downtown whenever they were shooting the Dark Knight?
Dark Knight Rises? We tried to go in and be part of the football scene, but we didn't get picked. We didn't get a ticket to get in, so... I know a couple people who did. They got like all their Gotham Rogues t-shirts and like knockoff terrible towels and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was pretty cool like to see like the city done up and everything.
In the snow.
Yeah. And then seeing like some of the Gotham police cruisers flying around and everything. So.
Yeah. My buddy said he's seen Bane's Batmobile down there.
Yeah.
Is that the tan one?
Where they had the final one of the final fights where Bane and Batman were fighting in the daylight on the steps of City Hall, which is more like a library. Me and my buddy were down around there and watching it from like the distance. So it was pretty awesome to see.
Oh, see, I didn't get to see any of those scenes. I was actually, I got off the bus downtown where, you know, where Saxon Fifth is downtown. Yeah. Okay. So I got off like on that same street right there where they had all the snow. And they're like, don't take pictures, don't take pictures. And I'm like, I'm taking pictures. You know, I got the Gotham City license plate and, you know, the bus and all this other stuff. And it's freaking the middle of July and there's snow on the ground. Like, I'm sorry, this is not Ohio. we don't get that kind of weather down here in Michigan. You know, it could snow in the middle of summertime here.
I don't know. Did you see Silent Hill?
Yeah. Those games are creepy too.
Yeah. By the way.
It was awesome to see parts of that, of The Dark Knight Rises. You know, that's kind of like one of my favorite movies a little bit. It's because, you know, I got to be a part of it down in Pittsburgh. You know,
it was, they filmed so much of Batman Begins up here in Chicago, and so they just probably got a better deal on doing Pittsburgh.
Probably. Yeah. They've been filming a lot of movies down around here. Where my office, where I deliver mail out of, they filmed the Christian Bale Out of the Furnace movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And it was funny because the post office doesn't care if you're filming a movie or not. We're delivering mail whether you're doing something or not. And, like, there are so many times, like, their crew would yell at us because we would be walking through. I'm like, mail's got to go.
Got to do your job.
This is a closed set. Yeah, well, yeah, you know, like, technically I'm a government agent, so it's
jurisdiction. I actually met Jake Gyllenhaal down there at the Omni Hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were shooting Love and Other Drugs. It was actually my first day in culinary school down there.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
That's so interesting. So you met Donnie Darko himself.
Yeah.
What turtle would Gyllenhaal play?
Because he's not very tall. He's not very tall at all.
Well, I imagine it would probably be his voice, you know. So,
well, his voice, I'd probably say he would want to be probably more of a Donnie or a Leo. I could see, possibly.
Wow. What about you, Steve? Who do you think Jake Gyllenhaal would play?
I'd say more of a Donnie because he has kind of like that low murmur, like very.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't want to say like he's very like with shy with the way he portrays his voice, but like he doesn't. He's not boastful, not loud with the tone. So I could see him being Donnie, like the voice of reason.
I'm going to take like a completely different turn here. I'm going to say I could see him as Raph. You ever seen him in between Jarhead and was it Southpaw and all that? Like when he gets like super animated and all that, because he could do anger. Like Donnie Darko, he showed you do anger. I mean, there's no right answer here, but obviously Donnie Darko and all that. So it's like I could see him playing both, but I think you guys are probably the truest there with Donatello.
What was that
interesting question to have come up though? That's probably the first time that's come up on our show. So
what about was that one movie that he played? It was like Night something where he was like
Nightcrawler, where he was the murder photographer.
Yeah, murder photographer slash like he set stuff up. Tom, some things. I remember that. That was
that Zodiac? Was he in that one? I don't know. I'm not the you know be all end all on Jake Gyllenhaal movies, but I did like Love and Other Drugs, so that was cool. So
the sad part is that I've never ever seen it. I've never seen that movie, but like I said, they were shooting a scene down there at the Omni Hotel. Like it was like literally my first day of culinary school, and like walked out. You guys are going
and then you've got your other connection there. You've got Anne Hathaway from Dark Knight Rises as well. So
yeah,
you know, everything has come full circle.
Yeah, so. And that was the whole thing. Is like I went down, and one of the girls was going like this, and I looked over to one of the other people, and I'm like, "Didn't he play in Brokeback Mountain?" Brokeback Mountain, and she was like, "Yeah," and she's like, "That's Jake Gyllenhaal." I was like, "I couldn't think of his name. This is like." 12 years ago.
At least you didn't mention Prince of Persia, so. <You know?
laughs> But, you know.
He's like, I wrote a friggin' ostrich.
I don't know why, but like... that Heath Ledger and them two, they just kind of like, I don't know, it kind of stood out to me. I've never seen that movie, but I've seen previews.
It's a good movie. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I was working at a Blockbuster at a time, and like, people are coming in, and they're like, is this movie any good? And I watched it, and I'm like, yeah, man, this movie's like amazing. It's one of those things where it's like, and you don't even realize like the small pieces that are in that movie that make it great. Like Randy Quaid is in that movie, right? Cousin Eddie from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and I'm like,
Shatterfall,
is that Cousin Eddie? You know, so it's like there's like little pieces of it and all that, and I'm like, Yeah, this is pretty damn good. So I would recommend it. If anyone likes actual like cinema movie with like a good story and stuff like that, it's like you may not like the subject matter or anything else like that, but it is a good movie, you know? Do you do any artwork from Brokeback? No, I'm just kidding. But let's go back to talking about like turtles and commissions and stuff like that. Like, are you doing anything right now? Like for commissions, like do you have it open? Anything you're working on that you're excited about?
I actually haven't picked up a pen or a pencil in a while.
Since tags,
work has been brutal. Dealing with the two cats passing away, like we touched on earlier. Just my house has been a little bit chaotic, so I haven't really had a lot of time to do a lot of work. I have a couple commissions I was working on that weren't actually turtle related, that I got to finish and get back to. It's just been chaotic, personally here in the household, so I got to get back on the horse, so to speak, and get back to work drawing wise. Like the other night I did, I had a drink and draw with a couple of my friends, and like I did a couple like digital sketches that I'm going to try to turn into thumbnails and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
Keep moving forward. So
when you were on tags and all that, I saw you around with Mike Ruth, and some of the other, they're all escaping my thoughts right now. What was the theme for that night? Was that a turtle theme, or was that like a Muppets wrestling theme or something?
Night I did was a turtles night, and actually no, both nights I did with turtle nights.
Cool.
And the first one I just did that. It was a Casey and Raph, like, basically like love letter to Mirage with like a lot of blood splatter on it and ink splatter to make it look black and white with red. And then the most recent one I did was around Christmas, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I was like, oh, I should do a mashup. And my youngest daughter told me that I should do a Christmas mashup. And that's where I came up with the Shredder Steals Christmas instead of the Grinch. And I just kind of like went with that. And it seemed to like a lot of people really enjoy like that piece a lot. It was probably one of my more fun pieces to do. Never thought I'd be homaging a Dr. Seuss book. So.
Yeah, right. It's Mikey as the Lorax, you know.
Right.
You might have some fun stuff going on. You know, you never know. That's cool. I love that aspect. Like just doing something that's just fun, and that's what seems to like resonate. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's like one of the things. Like a lot of people are like, oh, well, you don't take a lot of commissions. Like, well, if I don't want to do something, I don't want to do it. Like, it's not gonna be what I'm not gonna take a job just because to do it, because like I'm at that point where I don't have to. Like my regular job pays the bills, and this is my hobby. So like if somebody wants something like crazy outlandish that I just don't have the heart to do, like I'm gonna be like, no, that's not something I want to do. Now if like somebody comes up and like, hey, I want like a straight Mirage like turtle piece, I'm on it. But like if it's something like crazy weird and I'm just like, yeah, no. I've had some very interesting requests.
Oh, I bet. Come
through my mailbox, and I'm just like, why would you want somebody to draw that?
Yeah. You get a lot of April requests, or have you done not, April?
Not really. I haven't really done. I don't think I did one piece of
Press John as it came to you
where she was on, and that was it. But no, I don't think I've actually really done too many April. I did a the most female related one was I did a car with Wonder Woman and Harley Quinn on it. It was like very cheesecake pinup style.
Oh, cool.
But that's not really my thing. I prefer a little bit of action, a little bit of blood, a little bit of violence. So
I could see if there was like a Mirage version of like Baxter Stockman with like some Mausers and stuff like that. I think you would absolutely crush that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With a lot of the metal textures and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking how cool that would look. It would look like that issue 2 cover with just the Mausers with the reflection. I'm like, man, you would crush that with that dot technique. That would be so amazing. I'd love to see something like that myself. But,
yeah, that would be that would be fun to see.
Yeah, commissions just sound crazy sometimes. And when people recognize you have that talent, they're like, oh, yeah, I'd like to see this. And you're like, well, that's illegal. But, you know, it's like, you know, I can't even imagine. But, yeah, you probably run into that. When you do cons, are you doing sketch cards? Are you doing 8.5 by 11s? Like, what do you do?
I've only done the one con that was Granite Con this past year. Okay. And I did a couple sketch cards, but I really didn't want to do too much drawing while I was there because I wanted to like soak up the experience and actually talk to people. Like going to cons, like you always see the artist with the head down drawing and you kind of feel like you're bothering them. So like I didn't want that aspect. I did do one sketch cover. I did it for Rob Denner. It was a Dark Claw.
Yeah, I saw it. I was super jealous.
He'd actually like messaged me prior and he said he would bring the sketch cover with him. So I was like, okay, cool. So the one night I like just hunkered down in the hotel room and I just banged it out.
Nice.
Just to get it done. Cause like I said, I didn't really want to like have my head down drawn. I wanted to be able to like absorb it and suck it all in and like just experience being at a table, having my own booth and everything. So
that's awesome. That's really cool. I our hope is to be at a grand. I was actually just talking to someone about that today, this morning. So, you know, hopefully. Do you have plans to go this year?
Yeah, actually, I do. I was talking to Randy about it, and I'm probably going to do it again this year. And I was looking into doing one of the ones local here, the Three Rivers Con, if I can. It's just my vacation time with work is kind of hard to pull off, like, with everything. So like I have to kind of pick from a list and like I'm not the most senior person in my office, but I'm not the youngest, so like it's kind of like if I can get that week or not depends. So
that makes sense. And I mean that's the thing too, it's like you don't want to mess where you eat, you know, and it's like that's paying the bills. And you know, I totally understand because this is a hobby for us too. Like we like to tell you that one day we'll be the biggest turtle podcasters in the world and all that, but yeah, it's a hobby. Like we like yourself, you draw what you want to draw. We talk about what we want to talk about, and
yeah, we know, talk to who we want to talk to.
Exactly. You know, one week it's Francois Chow, you know, the actor that played Turtles in Turtles 2, and the next week it's Mr. Stephen King, you know, about his pointillism, you know, techniques and all that. So that's really cool. Have you ever read or gotten into like the Turtles Adventure comics or anything like that?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like the Ken Mitrooney, Steve Murphy and all that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, obviously like I was picking up every single turtle thing as a kid. Like, so like it was confusing because being 7, 8 years old, you don't understand like, why is this one in color and why doesn't it follow this story? Why isn't Bebop and Rocksteady in this black and white one, but they're in this color one, you know? I actually have, I think I'm only missing the last like 4 issues of Adventures, and I have 72, awesome. I think it is.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think I got the last one, and I saw it at a con and they were charging like $375 for it. Then sure enough, good old eBay, I found it for like $150. I'm like, done, hit that button, you know, and I got it and the thing was great. And I'm like, oh, man. So I'm only missing like 6 issues myself, but man, it's that to me, that was like my jumping on point. And like the cool thing about that, the reason I mentioned this is you mentioned that you haven't really been keeping up on the new stuff. They found a way, like with Tom King, to integrate a lot of the Mirage characters, but a lot of the themes and stuff from the Turtles Adventures are now in Armageddon Game.
So they brought in like the Nova Posse, Cherubay, and a couple other like people. So like I said, I have all of them bought. I just haven't had time to read them. Like maybe today, since you know there might be a big game on TV, but I'm not too interested in it. You know, so I might sit back and read a couple books. But my problem is like I have so many books that I don't have bagged and boarded that like I'll start reading them and then I'm like, oh, I got to bag and board all these. And then I spend like an hour putting boards in bags. And then by the time I get to it, I'm just like, yeah, I don't even want to read it now that I put it away.
Yeah. I kind of feel you. Cause I think I was reading Batman up into the part where it was like 2 years ago, they did like Fear State or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was a storyline where I think James Tynion took over and I have not kept up on them, but I have bought every issue since. So it's like, oh, did you check out the new Chip Zdarsky run? I'm like, well, I own all of them, but I have not read a single book from it. So I'm like 2 years behind on that book. I have them all. And my personal zen is being able to like put them in bags and boards and just sit there and just do it. Like, I love that. You know, that's like meditation for me.
I have, I don't really buy a lot of books. Like I buy Avengers, Thor, Batman, and then the Turtle books, and then I have a couple offshoots of the Batman, like the White Knight series and stuff like that. Yeah.
Sean Murphy and
literally, like, I have so many books downstairs that, like, I'm just like, I pick up one, like, I'll look through it, and then I'll like, oh, and then I end up picking up the next issue, and I'm like so confused. I'm like, I just got to sit down and actually like read through what I missed, and it's kind of hard to do when you have two kids running around and trying to take care of everything. So.
Yeah, that's, absolutely, man. It's hard. I started reading on Comixology a lot, and I'll do that, and I'll get the digital. I always read the Ronin or Lost Years digital because I'll read it at like midnight or something when it comes out like that. So I'm like, I'm on this because I, you know, just being one of those guys, like someone's going to text me and be like, dude, did you see when that happened? I'm like, son of a bitch. It's like, I didn't sleep so I could read this thing so someone wouldn't spoil it for me. So
that's when you got to mute that bish chat. So, you know,
yeah, that is exactly what I'm talking about. Actually. Yeah. But yeah, it's things like that. But,
you open up the phone and Benny B's in there spoiling the whole story already.
No,
if he could just not tell me what's in the box every couple of months, like, and just let me get it. It's 2 days, dude. Like, just wait, you know, that'd be great. So, but yeah, just other than that, you know, that's cool. But
favorite though, I think has to be, I don't think he's active in the Bishcord too much, but, Uncle Urchin, he does his live unboxing on Instagram and Facebook.
I've seen those.
And he's always on point with how he does it. And like, I'm sitting there thinking, I was like, yeah, my box is at home. I open, look at it, but I'm not as excited and like as ostentatious as you are with it. So it like makes me feel better about having the box.
Yeah. It's cool too. Like, I'll watch it afterwards to see like what they think about like the pieces and all that, because sometimes I don't even know. Like I remember getting a comic and I'm like, I don't even know what this is. So, you know, it'd be cool to have something to kind of decode that, you know, but now it's all Turtle stuff. So that's cool. And just for anyone listening, you know, check out the Bish Kids Club. It's, you know, you get a box quarterly, and I think otherwise you can join the Bish Kids chat, which is, it's its own thing, man. It's something else. Like every Friday we give each other the finger, you know, we flip each other off, and just, it's a real supportive community. There's a lot of cool people in it. And pretty much it's like, this is like your Ninja Turtles community is also the Bish. Like if you're looking to sell something, if you're looking to buy something, I love it. You know, I do the $25 a month one and I get a quarterly box. I like it. You go as little as $5 a month, I think. And just
that's
get in
what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
Used to be 25, but I do $5.
Plus, where else are you going to be able to sit there and talk shit to Ben Bishop and he has to take it?
Dude, seriously, it's so great. Like when he posts art and then everybody just literally shit posts him, it is the greatest. It's just so much fun. Like, oh, great. You're going to draw feet on that, Liefeld? You know, it's like, you know.
Bill had a really good one the other day.
A sick Bishburn.
Plagiarism.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah. Was that when Ben asked who everybody's favorite inker was?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I gave some good ones, man. I put Norm Rapamund on there, and I don't think anybody even thought of him.
Oh no, it was when Ben, he did the issue 2 for the Lost Years.
Oh, the Secret of the Ooze homage.
Yeah, he did that one. And hang on, what did he say? Bill.
That is a cool cover, by the way.
Yes. Wow, nice plagiarism. Classic Ben Bishop in action.
See, that's the kind of joy that you can get from...
That's what you expect from somebody from Ohio, though.
Hey, I'm not from Ohio. I'm from West Virginia. I just live in Ohio.
Oh, man. Why do I feel like that's a college sports feud there? It's all good. It's all good, you know, but yeah, that's one of the best things about this sort of community too. It's like, that's what I was saying at the beginning. It's like the people in the know who you are. They know your art, they know your style. So, you know, it's not surprising that, you know, you would make your rounds in kind of the Bish chat and all that too. So, you know, the people who know, and like I said, I love your stuff and, you know,
no, I appreciate that, man. Like I've hoping, had a lot of success from a lot of the people in there and everything. Met a lot of great people I mean, I keep mentioning him, Randy. Like, I'd take a bowl for that kid.
He's a good dude, man.
Like, he is legit probably the one person besides my own kids who pushed me to like actually continue to draw and like set up at Granicon. Like, without him, I probably would have been like, yeah, no, I'm just going to come and, like, hang out. Like, I'm not going to set up a table. And he's like, you need to set up a table. Well, him and Sibo both got on me to do it, so.
This is the thing about Randy, and I've gotten this from him, and I got that feeling from him, is that he sees a lot of potential. And, you know, obviously he deals with some people, you know, Mateus, as well as Camilo, Sophia.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he sees something in you, and I think he's, you know.
Now, he's mentioned three of my favorite artists, so I'm just...
Okay. So I'm like, this is just me on the outside looking in, and I'm not saying that this is what he wants, but I think he feels that this should be your job.
Yeah. No, he's mentioned that, like, he's pushed, and I'm...
See, I haven't even talked to him about that, but that's just something that I know that's what Randy wants to see, because Randy likes seeing people succeed. Like, Randy has told, you know, us, he wants us to be, you know, like the Turtle Podcast. You know, because, you know, I mean, we've had Randy on there. We've had, you know, the Granite Con owner on there, one of the co-owners, you know, and we've had a lot of people on here. But, you know, that's just me personally. That's just how Randy is. I think he sees a lot of potential, and I think a lot of us see a lot of potential, and this could be something that you could do, you know?
Yeah. And I greatly appreciate everybody getting my back on that. And like, it is mind blowing to know that like people want my art.
Man.
I would have never guessed that. Like, mm-hmm. That was the thing.
It gives me old school vibes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
When we were doing Granicon, it felt like crazy. Cause like, it was obviously like a dream of like when I was 7, 8 years old, ruining my parents' table to like be in a comic book con with like my heroes, literally two tables down, like Jim and Steve were like two tables down for me. And then, like, it was kind of like my redemption, because after I got out of high school in art school, like, I quit drawing. I hadn't picked up a pen or a paper in, like, almost 10 years after I graduated. And, like, it was kind of like my redemption to be, like, having a table and selling art. Like, it was kind of like, you know, this is what I should have been doing, you know? So it was, like, really, like, cathartic moment at Granicon to, like, be able to, like, suppress a couple demons and like let them out, you know.
Do you think you would do the belt championship if they asked you? Like,
yeah, I think that would be like something crazy. Like, I just can't see anybody unseating Ruth. Ruth will like break somebody's arm off and start inking with it like a champ, you know.
Like, he might
if he had his chance.
Bring
I mean,
a battle axe next
let,
time.
Let's be real. Mike is a very imposing looking person. Like, so he tells he's gonna break your arm off, and he's inking this piece. You like, here's my arm. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, but hey, man.
Mike was like amazing. Like seeing what he did at that challenge and hearing his backstory on. If you guys like, I know you guys had him on recently. I don't know if he mentioned it or not, but like he said, like he brought all these different papers and pens, and they're like, oh no, we're just gonna draw on the back on the comic board. And he was like, oh, well, I got this really cool, like, great. Like, no, we're just doing it on the comic board. And, Mike is a trip. Like, I just can't see anybody unseating him, but I would definitely love to have the opportunity to go against him.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? And I mean, mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just the concepts, you know? And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, what was it? Like, doing yoga or something like that. And I'm like, that's crazy. You know, and it's... And all these artists are up there. I think Vance was up there, and mm-hmm. and Santaluco and Mike and Ben and all that. And they're like, oh yeah, draw this. And it's crazy because it's all off the cuff, and mm-hmm. I could see you doing really well with something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, just with that. I mean, I don't know how much time they're going to give you to make the dots, but
yeah, like, that's the problem. Is like doing the dots is like very time consuming. Like if I were in a speed challenge, I'm dead out of the water, because I'm going to have to switch it up and do the, let me just throw some black ink down or some cross hatching. Cause I'm not getting a lot of stippling done in like a short time.
You get the tattoo needle that has like all the additional ones. So yeah, you can do them in like a row.
The 51 or the 7-1.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. I didn't even get to ask you, have you ever done any tattoo work or anything like that? Cause it seems like this
I've designed a couple. I thought, like, coming out of art, like, the commercial art program, we actually had, like I said, our teacher brought in a comic artist. She also brought in a tattoo artist to talk about the different avenues. And I thought about it, but then something about drawing on somebody's skin that's permanent just kind of freaks me out. Like, I can throw out a piece of paper that I screw up on. We ain't peeling that skin off.
Yeah, yeah.
They can laser it now.
Yeah. Just don't make it in red, and he loves making red. So it's like...
Yeah.
bloody.
It would be pretty cool, but like I said, at the same time, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want to have something like that. And then you see so many, like...
mess ups,
bad tattoos. Like I used to love watching Ink Master, and
yep.
when they would do like the cover up challenge where somebody had like something so horrible and then they got it covered. I'm like, man, that would probably be my art that was the crappy one they're covering up.
Man, I like that. I got into that show because my kids like it, and we were lucky enough to have Tom Bowman on and just get to know him and kind of everything that's going on with those Bolairs and all that. That's and I know Randy's got a pair of them. So, and Steve Levine and Steve Levine's wife have a pair of them. So, but yeah, I don't know if I ever got a turtle tattoo, I'd probably go with something that would be more Mirage based. I think
I have some turtle tattoos.
Yeah, you got a couple that are similar to Mirage.
Full leg piece. Let's see if I can pull it up here.
Is that colored? Yeah, it looks like it's colored.
This is colored, but
yeah.
They're all getting the red bandanas, and then background's gonna be like black. Black and gray wash and all that stuff.
Well, that's awesome. I think it's cool. So, Steve, what's next? What's next for you? Where do you hope to go from here? Like, what are your plans?
I kind of think I might, before it's over, I might try to do another metal Lost Years book, like my own bootleg again. Just because I had a couple concepts that I wanted to do that I just never fulfilled. And was in talks with a couple things. So I might just do that. I was thinking, like, if I don't, like, there's so many different parameters with how you have to get approved for certain covers. If I just do my small, like, 5-10 issue run where I bootleg it myself, like, with my medals over top of the regular book, I can just do what I want and nobody can say no.
Yeah.
So
do you keep any for yourself?
Yeah. I have, I print and, like, made, forget how many I had, but like I keep the number one out of the 20 or whatever.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I did a 5 run of a gold cover of the Ronin 5 where it was the Lawson homage where he was Leonardo cutting off the head from Return to New York. And I gave Jim the 1 of 5 gold cover at Granite Con.
That's awesome.
Just because like he was obviously the inspiration behind it. So.
That's so cool. I'm glad that he's so receptive to that. Like the only thing we've ever heard from him is that he's the nicest guy and that he loves motorcycles. So the only things that we've ever heard. So, you know, and I mean, like in terms of layouts, it's like the way that he positions things and all that is great. Like he's got a great mind for that, you know? So,
yeah,
you know.
No, like Jim is probably, he's definitely like, I mean, top 3 of the artists is Kevin, Pete, and then Jim for me as turtle artists.
That's cool. That's cool that he is that high. And I have a hard time understanding myself why he would be that high for people because it was never something that connected me. Like I was into Dooney style and that was like, okay, this is like the best there is. So it's like, you know, I just think of things differently because it's like, I really connected with that style. So, or like the AC Farley style, like those two to me, are like
everybody has their own, you know, own styles or, you know, like I like Rue style. I like your style.
Yeah,
And there's a bunch of different styles out there that I do like, and there's some, it's just like, okay, I'm good.
Kind of wonder who they paid to get their book cover done.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, I mean, there was that one issue last, on the last Ronin, and I'm like, okay, where did this come from? Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's plenty of other artists did a hell of a
lot. Are you talking about one of the variants?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that too. And I mean, we were talking about that a little bit before. It's like, I've never really connected with like the Roiland style, you know, with like the Justin Roiland stuff. It's like, it just never really appealed to me.
Yeah. Like, I mean, everybody has their own thing, and there's people that like Roiland style, and there's people that you know, I don't like certain things and other people like it. I mean, it's just how we are, you know?
Yeah. And art style, it's just some's not appealing to others. And like I said before, like, I'm okay if you don't like my art. My art, it doesn't bother me. This isn't
some people do and some people don't.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not gonna change to fit into somebody's parameter if they think that it would be better if I did it this way. Like, I'll take your criticism, but this is what I do. This is my style. This is the way it is. So,
yeah,
that's cool. If we ever talk to Jim, I'll probably talk to him more about like his writing, because he single handedly kept the franchise alive for 10, 11 years. You know, with like Tales of, and it's like no one's doing literally anything, and he's the only one doing stuff in comics, and that impact alone is so important, because we wouldn't have half the stuff down the road without Jim Lawson. So it's like he's like you say, in terms of like importance, he probably is the third most important person in Mirage ever. So just for that impact alone, so you know, it's pretty crazy. But that's cool.
That's what's crazy to me is like, up until I think last year when the Eisners finally gave Kevin the Hall of Fame award, like none of them were ever mentioned in any circles, like the big guys from Marvel or DC. Like, and that blows my mind. Like these guys like should be heralded just as high as your Romitas and everybody else, because like they've been doing it and they did it on their own. Like, and I never understood, like, cause I know, talked to Ben the one night about Kevin not ever getting awards, and Kevin's never won an award. Like, you would think, like, with everything he's done and everything that Pete did and with everything that Jim and Steve did, like, they aren't ballyhooed as like top tier people.
Blows my mind, man.
And I think it just has to do with the fact that, like, you know, there's the big two biased. They didn't do anything for the big two. Like, they did it themselves, and so that's why they don't get the shine as much. But it's very strange to me, like those guys like who've done so much and they like aren't regarded in any of the conversations outside of the Turtle fan base.
Yeah, it is weird. It's cool to see that now Kevin's getting like Marvel covers, or like he did a Conan, he did a Carnage, he did like a Wolverine and all that. And Berserker. It's like, I love this. Yeah, Berserker, he just did a Berserker cover. Like, I love this stuff. You know, and I'm glad to see that he's getting that, because his style is so ingrained in me where it's like, yeah, I want that. Like, I want that X-Men cover. I want that take that he's doing on Carnage and stuff like that. But those are not my favorite characters. Like, I love X-Men. I always loved them when I was a kid and stuff like that. But it's like, I don't read the book now because it's a convoluted quagmire of crap. You know, I'm like, I could read Turtles and be like, all right, giant cowhead taking people interdimensional to fight aliens. Got it. Yes. You know, now this one's like, but there's six different timelines, and Beast is ahead in the cabinet, and he's taken over by Age of Apocalypse, which never happened. Yeah, I'm like, you know what? I'm good. You know, so it's like, you know, but to go back to your point, it's like, oh, okay, but these guys that did these Turtle stuff aren't worthy? That just doesn't compute, you know? And if anybody should be getting stuff, it's like, when you look at an art style that has endured for 40 years, and, I mean, the worst in I have to be careful not to be too insulting here. So, but like, I will take Kevin Eastman's art over John Romita's art any day, because I prefer it. And I don't mean a negative view of Romita's art, but it's like, I've seen it. I've seen it since it was in the X-Men's. And I really like what he did with the Batman Punisher, but it's like, I've seen him do Spider-Man 1,000 times. I've seen him do all this stuff with Marvel and a little bit in DC. And it's like, okay, I prefer Kevin's style, you know? So, and that's not negative, hopefully. So, you know, I don't mean to smash him, because he's done some great stuff. But yeah, that's cool. It's interesting. I never thought that, you know, until that point, he'd never won anything. And that does blow my mind a little bit.
Yeah, like it's crazy. Like, because like the one thing, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Ed Piskor and Jim Rugg, who do the cartoonist kayfabe.
Yep.
They've had a series run where like they did Kevin a couple, like a year ago. And now they got Pete and Kevin doing combo things. I think they just dropped the one on issue 3 today. Those are guys to my heart, because they're from Pittsburgh. Those are guys who I've met and seen.
Oh, you know Pisker? Yeah, man, that history of hip-hop? A couple
times.
Woo!
Funny thing is, I used to be his mailman.
No kidding! Wow. Yeah.
I delivered. It's funny because Dave Walker, I delivered his mail also.
Oh, okay.
It's crazy, like, to know, like, there's so many people around this area, in Pittsburgh who, like, are still, like, doing stuff. But Ed's, like, really cool. I've met him, like I said, down at a couple different comic shops. I met Jim Rugg once, like, in passing at a comic store, like, just kind of passed each other, said what's up, and I was like, oh my god, I think that was Jim. And but Ed's
did
really...
you tell him you were his mailman?
No, that was Ed. I did mention that to him the one time at the comic book signing he was doing down at the Phantom, and we laughed about it. Seeing them, like Kevin and Pete, getting the shine now with that large of a group with Cartoonist Kayfabe, like, I'm like, yeah, that's, it's about time. Like, it's sad it's taking this long, but it's about time. So
I love Pisker's work. Like, it's so good, and it's like Harry Crumb mixed with like Mad Magazine and stuff, like the yes. style, and it's just so interesting. And he
dude,
did
his Red Rum stories or his graphic drawings in Red Rum just blow my mind. Like, in he'll like post some like him inking at like 2 o'clock in the morning with the old nibs and everything, and it's just mesmerizing to see somebody using the nib style still.
Yeah, yeah, man. And it's
everything's
it's
digital now. Nobody does pen and paper really anymore. Everybody just does digital. So
in that large format that he did with the X-Men book,
yes.
the history of the X-Men, where it's like, okay, this predated Ronin by at least 2 years. And it's like, there's 6 or 7 issues of this thing where it's a giant prestige style format. So, you know, he's doing it on maybe like a bigger paper or something like that, but there's so yeah. much crammed into it. It's like George Perez, you know, it's like, oh, guess what? There's a little Easter egg here, and it's, yeah, it's good. If there's any, I know we talk about this once in a while, but like any hip hop fans out there, go check out Ed Piskor's The History of Hip Hop. It'll knock your socks off in terms of that. Like, just starting out there, the stuff that he goes through, like starting out with like the early, like Brooklyn Beats and like, Grandmaster Flash and all that stuff, like all the way up to like current stuff at the time, is really groundbreaking.
Yeah. And then he followed it up with, like you said, the X-Men Grand Design, like,
yeah.
which was just like touching
and,
on
I mean,
everything.
He's doing
like,
the covers too. You know?
Yes.
And I think he did the inking, the covers. I'm not sure if he did the colors, but.
Yeah, I don't know if he did the colors or not, but the best thing was, though, was the paper style that he had it printed
yes.
on.
Like,
yes. it felt like the old 80s pulp paper that, like, you know that feeling when you go into an old comic shop and you start leafing through books and that whiff of that old paper hits. It's just like, boom.
That's why you're looking at the cover price of the book and you're like, oh, I get it. You know, it's
yeah.
I didn't have any problems. I mean, I think the only problem I had was that it didn't fit in the regular sized back and board. But
yeah.
I mean, otherwise it's like that was a lot of fun, and I'd love to see like more stuff like that, and maybe we'll get a history of the TMNT. That would be cool.
Oh yeah. That would be amazing if they did the Grand Design Turtle book. If that was something Ed and Jim were able to do together, it would be amazing.
Oh yeah, Jim Lawson would be a perfect collaborator, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Dude, that's awesome. That has got the creative juices flowing. Would you ever be interested in doing a book with the writer Stephen King?
Yeah, yeah, that would be something else. That was like it's funny because obviously, like I said, I grew up in the Boston area as a kid in the 80s, and like everybody obviously was like, "Oh, are you related?" Because he lived up in Maine, and
yep.
I was in Boston. I'm like, "No, it's just my name." Didn't
a lot
think
of kings
about it
out
as a
there.
Kid. Yeah, and then we moved to Pittsburgh. Like, everybody was like, oh, you're from New England. That's where he's from. Are you? I'm like, no.
So, like, yeah, I'm him. Yeah,
yeah, that's why the tagline came up, and that's on my banner, the artist, not the author, because everybody sees Stephen King, and they're just like, even though it's spelled differently, everybody's like, oh, you're this. And I'm like, no.
So. That's crazy. That's so crazy, man. And did you ever have a favorite book or work of his, or have you kind of avoided that to avoid any money?
I've read a couple books. I don't really have a personal preference as my favorite. Obviously, like The Stand was amazing. It was better than the actual movie or anything if you read the book, which, but like it wasn't. I'm not really big, huge guy into horror too much, so it doesn't really appeal to me that much.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, I like it for what it is and as much as it is, but it's not like my, oh my God, my go-to, you know? Unless it's an Eric Talbot book, because then he makes the Turtles horror, and that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool, man. And you know, I hope that we start seeing some more stuff for you, because I really enjoy your art. And I'd like to see, like, if we get some Ronin covers and stuff like that. And maybe they'll give you a cool Lost Years cover where you can actually draw, like, what happened to Wrath, or, you know.
That would be amazing, yeah.
Would you draw Splinter on the table, or would you just draw, like, you know, Wrath, like, tearing through some foot ninjas?
Yeah, I mean, that would be it. Like, it would be probably borderline some body count type style with just chaos. So, I mean, you got to homage. If you're going to do a Wrath story, you got to go with the craziness of that Simon and Kevin did with body count. So,
yeah, it's hard to disagree. So on that one, so with that, we won't keep you any longer. You know, we got a big game to not watch today. So, but folks can get you. I have Art of Stephen King on Instagram and Twitter, and then Stephen King Art on Facebook. Any other place that you like folks to find you?
No, that's about it. So,
in the Bish Chat, of course.
Yeah, so, Bish Chat.
You know, check that out. Anyone's listening, go check out the Bish Kids Club. You know, it's not a cult. You know, you can
give them your money so you can yell at them and talk shit to them.
It's a lot of fun.
Right?
It really is. So, Eric, any questions that I maybe missed? Yes, and good ones. All right. Normally I'll ask this. This will be my final question for you. With pizza, what's your go-to pizza topping? And it could be pineapple or no pineapple, but it could be, it's up to you, because following.
Okay, it's a deal breaker. It depends on what you pick with the pineapple. If you pick pineapple or not, it's a deal breaker between me and you.
I'm basic, man. Just give me pepperoni cheese pizza.
There you go. Yeah.
Do you like pineapple on your pizza?
I've had it like twice. I'm not opposed to it, but it's not my go-to.
I like it, so I don't.
Okay, I guess we could stay at an even, you know, even playing field right now.
I'm counting that as a victory, Eric. So
I mean, Eric, it's no pepperoni roll, but you know.
Yeah.
True.
I'm assuming that's true. A Pittsburgh thing.
That's a West Virginia thing.
Oh, West.
Oh my gosh! Do you get the one with the pepper jack?
Yeah.
Why don't you send me that recipe if you got it, Eric? And then we'll put that.
I don't have a recipe. There's some pepperoni rolls down there in West Virginia, and there's this one that has pepper jack. There's no sauce, just pepperoni, pepper jack. You heat it up, and it's, oh my God.
It's like a stromboli.
It's literally just a roll with pepperoni in it, and that's it.
I will look this up.
Nothing special, nothing great, but Country Club Bakery in Fairmont got the best.
All right. Okay. I'm gonna look into that. Pizza roll. Okay. Pizza roll, or is it pepperoni roll?
Pepperoni roll.
All right. So thank you to our guests, Mr. Stephen King. Thank you to Eric. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for our pizza time of the day. I'm gonna try to look up and see if I can get this West Virginia pizza roll. And thanks for joining us.
I'll send you the information, man.
Oh yeah, no, please do. Please do. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on Epic Tales from the Sewers.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
It's pizza time.
And now, in a segment that we call Pizza Time, where we discuss any Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle or pizza-related food, I give you Pizza Time.
Today's Pizza Time is inspired by our guests Stephen and Eric's heritage in West Virginia. It is West Virginia Pizza Rolls. Ingredients: dry yeast, warm water, all-purpose flour, sugar, salt, eggs, pepperoni, mozzarella cheese, and butter. Combine the yeast and the water in a large bowl and allow to sit for 5 minutes until you see a foaming action. Stir in melted butter, salt, sugar, and eggs. Slowly incorporate the flour in 1 cup at a time, stirring as you go, until the flour is incorporated. The dough will become sticky and tough to stir. Cover the bowl of the dough and then refrigerate for 2 hours. Now, how to make the pepperoni rolls. When the dough is ready, flour your counter or workspace. Knead the dough, working some of the flour into it so it will be less likely to stick. Cut the dough in half and then continue halving until you have 18 equal portions of dough. Add more flour to the counter, roll each piece of dough into a ball, then gently flatten to about half inch thick. Place a couple of pepperoni slices and a handful of cheese on one side of each of the circle of dough. Fold it up and pinch the ends to seal the pepperoni and cheese inside. Next step. Place the rolls in a baking sheet with a silicone baking mat or parchment paper, seam side down. Cover with a towel and allow to rise for 45 minutes to an hour. Brush with melted butter, then bake for 18 minutes at 375 degrees until the crust is golden brown. The more butter you use, the flakier the crust. So go ahead and use as much butter as you need to. That is our pizza time for the day, the West Virginia pepperoni roll.
Cowabunga, dudes!
Thank you for listening to the Epic Tales from the Sewers podcast. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were created by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. This podcast has no affiliation with Eastman, Laird, Mirage Studios, IDW Studios, Archie Comics, or Nickelodeon Studios. This podcast is a member of the Dorkening Podcast Network. Check out thedorkening.com for other podcasts. Epic Tales from the Sewers is recorded by Justin Cooper and Eric Will.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. We have very active lifestyles. It's not all wandering the countryside aimlessly or scaring passing motorists. And we all love a good cup of joe. And there's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. Bold, robust, delicious. It's coffee that can wake the dead. With over a dozen different roasts and flavors, Deadly Grounds can satisfy the most finicky of coffee addicts. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door! Oh, they're so disgusting.
It took me 10 years to make the perfect man cave.
And then we took it over. And we made it into the multiversal chamber.
Then I started my own podcast.
And we took that over too.
And we're the co-hosts, the Multiverse Kids.
Yeah, and I'm the dad, the geeky dad. And every week, we what?
We review the movies, shows, and books.
Games and toys.
Yeah. And sometimes we even have a special guest. So, join us every week on the Geeky Dad Podcast.
Greetings and shabibins. We are the Retro Reductibus Cephala Podcast, a long-form bi-weekly show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome.
Yeah, that sounds good, but I don't know what all those words mean.
I think what Parasite Seed's trying to say is that on Retro Reductibus, we explore a range of retro goodness, from toys, video games, and movies, to cartoons, and even snacks and school lunches.
Oh.
And we do it all with a positive spin, a slew of killer guests, and some very adult language.
And you know what else is cool?
No.
This crazy show is part of the Dorking Podcast Network, with new episodes every Tentacle Tuesday.
What's that?
And if waiting 2 weeks for a new episode gives you a sad, know that we drop bonus episodes all the time, like the off-format Crow's Nest and an interview series we call The Brick.
You can listen to Retro Redoctopus on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any app that's cool enough to carry the only show that celebrates all the things that make growing up awesome.
Hi, this is Francois Chow. I am the Shredder from Secret of the Ooze, and it's been a pleasure for me to talk to Justin and Eric on Epic Tales from the Sewers. It's been great, guys.
Do you like retro video games?
80s and 90s toys, and have a love for nostalgia.
Hi, I'm Russ Lyman.
What's up, guys? I'm Jay, the NES addict.
Welcome to the weekly Warp Pipe.
Jump into the Warp Pipe with us and go back to revisit all the awesome things from our childhood.
That's right. Every week we discuss something new, like the hardest NES games.
Or what it's like to get prizes out of cereal boxes.
What our top 10 toys were.
Battle Beast.
No, dude. It was Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah. Cowabunga.
So be sure to check out theweeklywarpipe.com for more info.
And we're proud to be a part of the Dorkening Podcast Network.
That's right, you can join us every Saturday at 7 a.m. for new episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Or catch the video version on YouTube at the Weekly Warpipe channel.
That's the Weekly Warpipe every Saturday at 7 a.m.
The Weekly Warpipe.
Do you like gaming?
You know, this game would be better if it was a battle royale.
Do you like technology?
I bet this tech would work better if it was a battle royale. Do you like movies, TV shows, and everything else that me and Nate can't agree on?
The Last Jedi was easily the best Star Wars film I have ever seen.
That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Everybody in this room is stupid now because of you.
Talking Gaming and Tech is a bi-weekly podcast where we cover the latest, greatest in gaming and tech.
Now part of the Dorkening Podcast Network.
Talking Gaming and Tech is a podcast produced by Tech Prime Media. You can find us on YouTube and all their social media platforms. You can find Talking Gaming and Tech on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts from.
This podcast is filmed live.
If you want to check us out while we're filming live, remember to follow links on social media and your comment might be read on air.